You have 11 unawakened essence abilities. This is the most common of the three, Clive said. The Magic Society grades stones on a scale of 1 to 5 stars, based on how frequently they are known to appear worldwide. We work with brokers and the Adventure Society to try and catalogue them all. Jason's ability also seems to grade them into 5 stages of rarity, but not numerically. The stones you've used thus far were all common or 1 star. Uncommon is 2 star. Sophie touched the next stone, which was blue with streaks of white. Item, Awakening Stone of the Sky. Unranked, epic. An awakening stone containing the freedom of the open sky. Consumable, awakening stone. Requirements, unawakened essence ability. Effect, awakens an essence ability. You have 11 unawakened essence abilities. Epic, she said. 4 star, the second highest rarity, Clive explained. After it took so long to catch you, the Adventure Society raised the reward to a 4-star awakening stone for each person on the team that caught you.
They had to make it a limit of 6 people after people started forming giant groups, Jason said.
After we caught you, Clive said, there were some issues, as you may recall. Jason and I collected our rewards yesterday evening, and we were given a selection of 4-star stones.
The second highest rarity, Belinda said. Are they the kind of stones you used?
Actually, I used all 1- and 2-star stones, Clive said. I was given an epic 4-star essence, however, a rune essence. Very valuable.
Who gave you that? Jason asked. There can't be a lot of epic essences in an eel farm.
My mentor, Clive said. He was the director of the Magic Society, the predecessor to Lucian Lamprey's predecessor. He took me out to the Delta, gave me an education, showed me the value of what we do at the Magic Society. I became an adventurer just in time for the last monster surge when I was 16. He died during the surge, and after it was over, I never tried my hand at adventuring again until just recently. I threw myself completely into the Magic Society, but our branch here isn't the same as it was back then.
I don't imagine Lamprey fostering a positive institutional culture, Jason said.
No, Clive said. I'd say the one before wasn't any better, but Lamprey really does set a new low.
I'm not even in the Magic Society, and I know that much, Belinda said.
Jason turned his attention back to the stones. Stone of the Sky, he said. I considered picking that one and using it myself.
It's very highly sought after, Clive said. The chances of awakening some kind of flight power are very good. I'm a little surprised our Adventure Society here had one.
Turns out I already have a flight power, Jason said. Clive told me. I'm super looking forward to it now, but it won't let me fly until Silver Rank.
Jason has a number of abilities we have very little information on, Clive said. We do have thorough records on a number of them, however, and his cloak ability will let him glide at bronze rank and fly at silver. It won't be as effective as a more dedicated movement power, but he will fly.
I should probably look up what my abilities do at later ranks, Jason said. Clive turned on him in disbelief.
That's what I've been telling you.
Are you sure? Jason asked. Doesn't ring a bell. As Clive started turning red, Jason turned to Sophie. Clive picked this one in the end, since we were giving them to you. It's your best bet at a flying power.
There are no guarantees, though, Clive said, still glaring at Jason. It could just as easily give you a special attack effective against enemies in the air.
Don't be a downer, Clive, Jason said.
I'm just managing expectations, Clive said. Take a look at the last stone, and then we'll begin.
Sophie reached out and touched the last stone, which was clear, with such clarity as to be hard to see.
Item, Awakening Stone of Purgation. Unranked, epic. An awakening stone possessed of a cleansing power. Consumable, awakening stone. Requirements, unawakened essence ability. Effect, awakens an essence ability. You have 11 unawakened essence abilities. This will almost certainly give you some kind of cleansing ability, Clive said. You don't have any obvious essences for it, so it could come in many forms.
It might be a balance ability that transfers afflictions to your enemies, or a swift ability that lets you recover from afflictions faster. It might be some other ability with a self-cleanse as a secondary effect.
How valuable are these epic stones?
Belinda asked.
Each of them is more valuable than all the other stones put together, Clive said. The Sky Stone is more valuable than either of the essences you used.
And you're just giving them to me? Sophie asked.
Your indenture contract is 6 months, Jason said. By the time it's over, you'll have been an adventurer for longer than I have. As of right now, you'll earn them. Believe me.
The question, Clive said, is what order do you want to use them in? Do you want to start off with the potential flight power, or save that for the end?
Even if you get one, Jason warned, you probably won't be able to fly well. My friend Humphrey can fly, but it costs him so much mana he can't do it for long.
Clive nodded.
He's right, Clive said. At iron rank, the power will either be restricted by cost or the type of flight, like gliding. It will get cheaper or more useful as you rank up.
Speaking of which, Jason said, you didn't use any monster cores to raise the ability you already have, right?
No, Sophie said. Before my father died, he left my one essence with Belinda's father, who performed the ritual once I was old enough.
My dad didn't have any essences himself, but he knew a good hodgepodge of different magical fields. He knew that monster cores would mess up her essence development, and warned her off them, Belinda said.
Sounds like a good guy, Clive said.
He was a drunken prick whose sole act of decency was not selling off that essence before giving it to Sophie, she said. He tried to rob Cole Silver's father and failed badly. Silver killed him, and I was saddled with making restitution.
How do you know when you're old enough to use an essence? Jason asked.
Also, what happens if you try and you're not old enough?
There's a simple test for whether your body can handle it, Clive said. Usually that's 16 or 17, but I've heard of as low as 14 and as late as 19 or 20. As for what happens if you aren't ready, well, I've heard horror stories, magical deformities, people using children in essence experiments to try and unlock the secrets of essences.
Clive shook his head.
Not every magic society branch is the best group of people, obviously, he said. Even the worst of us will put a stop to that, though.
Well, no worries here, Belinda said. Sophie's practically a spinster. I'm 23.
Me too, Jason said. Actually, it's been about 4 months. I think I missed a birthday.
I'm going to set up the next ritual, Clive said. Pick which stone you want to use.
Do the Sky Stone last, Belinda said. If you actually get the power to fly, we can head straight out and try it.
Good idea, Jason said. Work your way up to the big finale. Sophie nodded, and Clive got to work, quickly setting up and performing the ritual using the uncommon stone of focus.
You have awakened the Swift Essence ability, Avatar of Speed. You have awakened 2 of 5 Swift Essence abilities. Ability, Avatar of Speed, Swift. Special ability, cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, iron, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Your movement abilities have increased effect and reduced stamina and mana cost.
That seems a bit underwhelming, Belinda said.
From the middle of the fading ritual circle, Sophie exploded into motion. She swiftly ran to the side of the room and up the wall, turning to run along the wall and around the room multiple times.
Well, that's quite a thing,
Clive said as the others watched her go around, swerving side to side on the wall in little jukes that didn't seem to slow her down.
Is she normally that zippy?
Jason asked Belinda.
Not sure, Belinda said. When she goes running, the first thing she does is run away, so I never get to see much.
Sophie leaped off the wall, flipping in the air and landing in a crouch.
That may be the sexiest thing I've ever seen, Jason said.
You know you said that out loud, right?
Clive asked.
I'll stand by it.
Belinda looked at Jason from under a skeptically furrowed brow.
You think a woman backflipping off a wall is sexy?
She asked him.
Yep.
You're weird.
I'll stand by that too. Sophie stood up and walked over to them.
Good ability, she said.
Avatar abilities are often good, Clive said. They embody an aspect of an essence, making you very good at a specific thing, in this case, movement abilities.
I like being fast, Sophie said. The ability I've always had makes me fast, and this makes me faster.
Can you show us that ability? Jason asked.
How do I do that?
It's pretty instinctive. You just want to, basically.
After a brief moment, the ability appeared in front of them.
Ability, free runner, swift. Special ability, cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Increased speed. Low stamina and mana per second cost to run on walls and water. Momentum must be maintained on walls or water to prevent falling. Effect, bronze. Enhanced balance and spatial sense.
Enhanced balance and spatial sense, Jason read.
That would let you move very fast through a complicated environment.
Super parkour.
Parkour?
In my world, it's what we call the practice of moving through complex spaces with efficiency and speed. People train to be very good. I'm guessing that ability of yours makes you very, very good at it.
Yes, Sophie said, plainly.
He could see she wasn't boasting, but simply stating a fact. She neither wanted nor needed his validation. He chuckled.
That's a classic skill-oriented power, Clive said. It seems simple and underpowered, but lets you do something you're good at very well.
Let's see about the next one, Sophie said. Set it up.
Clive did just that, performing the ritual of awakening with the Stone of Purgation.
You have awakened the Wind Essence ability, Cleansing Breeze. You have awakened 2 of 5 Wind Essence abilities. Ability, Cleansing Breeze, Swift. Aura, Holy, Cleanse. Cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, iron, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Allies within the aura have increased resistance to curses, diseases, magic afflictions, poisons, and unholy afflictions. This is a holy effect. Negates poisons in the air. This is a cleanse effect.
Aura, Clive said. That is a big win.
It is, Jason agreed.
Why is that? Belinda asked.
Aura manipulation is an important skill for adventurers, Clive said. You can only learn it once you have an aura power, although any aura power will do.
He's right, Jason said. Aura control is one of the things that differentiates a capable adventurer from a scrub.
A scrub?
Sophie asked. You might know it as a buster, Jason said. Doesn't matter. You can get it from context.
It's an unexpected ability for the wind essence, Clive said. I would have expected something from the mystic essence. It's also the exact opposite of Jason's aura.
Will they conflict? Belinda asked.
No, Clive said. Jason's aura only affects enemies, while Miss Wexler's only affects allies. So long as they're on the same side, it won't be a problem.
Clive and Belinda looked between Jason and Sophie, who were giving each other assessing looks.
I wouldn't rule out problems just yet, Belinda said.
It's a holy ability too, Clive said. That matches well with a Celestine holy affinity.
I thought they had astral affinity, Jason said.
They have holy too, Clive said. Still not as many as elves who have life, nature and magic affinities, which is why elves make such good healers. I'll set up the next ritual.
Jason stood next to Clive as he used his essence ability to draw golden lines on the floor. How likely is it really that she picks up a flight power? He asked quietly. I've heard a lot of people say that you can't go making predictions, yourself included.
Looking at all 20 abilities, that's correct. It's why the best approach is to select a more general direction for your power set. Pick out your essences and leave the specifics to fate. There's always one or two abilities you can confidently see coming, though. For example, there are certain awakening stones that have a higher chance of producing auras if you have a lot of abilities and no aura yet. Another example is all those feast stones you used, Jason.
I didn't tell you about that.
Farah did. The combination of feast stones and the blood essence meant that a health-draining power was almost a certainty. It could have been any of a wide slew of health-draining powers, but you're almost certain to get one of them. If you combine a Celestine's natural aptitude for utility powers, the wind essence, and a skystone, that's as close to a guarantee of a flight power as you get. You couldn't ask for a better chance, except for maybe with the wing essence.
Jason moved away from the circle, pausing next to Sophie. "Good luck," he said, then joined Belinda out of the way against the wall. Clive performed the ritual no differently than any of the others.
"You have awakened the wind essence ability, Leaf on the Wind. You have awakened 3 of 5 wind essence abilities. Ability, Leaf on the Wind, Swift. Special ability, Movement. Dimension, Cost, Moderate mana per second. Cooldown, None. Current rank, Iron, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Glide through the air, highly effective at riding the wind. Can reduce weight to slow fall at a reduced mana cost. Ignore or ride the effects of strong wind, even when this ability is not in active use."
Clive let out a boyish laugh.
"You've got it," he said. "I'll have to look it up to make sure, but I'd bet my library that's a flight power."
Jason took out a tablet and looked up the ability. "Yep," he said. "It was the third one down on the list of wind essence flight abilities. From what I'm seeing here, you glide at iron and sort of fly glide at bronze. Riding the wind, that sort of thing. You'll have full-blown flight at silver, then go back to wind riding at gold, but you'll be controlling the wind. Doesn't say about diamond, which is no surprise." Sophie and Belinda looked at each other, grins spreading on their faces.
"You can fly,"
Belinda said. Sophie nodded.
"I can feel it."
"The next move is obvious, then," Jason said. "Let's go jump off a sky palace."
"You might want to be a little cautious," Clive said, "until she gets a handle on the ability."
"Boo," Belinda jeered.
"Did you just boo me?" Clive asked.
"And so she should," Jason said. "Boo."
"You're acting like children."
"We're about to go jump off the roof," Jason said. "Of course we're acting like children."
Chapter 10. Starseed. In the Adventure Society marshalling yard, a portal opened and people started stepping through. There were 14 in total, each bearing a pin marking them as Adventure Society officials. The woman at the front looked to be of early middle age, with her hair unflatteringly pinned tightly back. Her Adventure Society pin was black. Jason, Clive, Belinda, and Sophie waited until the last memorial for the day had finished before moving outside to test Sophie's new abilities. The gliding had a few false starts, but the slow fall function of the power was intuitive enough that she went unharmed. Several attempts in, she was gliding out over the ocean before curving back in to land on the lower levels of the palace. Of course, she would have preferred if the earlier attempts hadn't involved dragging her waterlogged self onto one of the palace's sea-level platforms. Aside from her gliding ability, being outdoors allowed her to test her wind blade. She could throw out a shimmering arc of slicing wind with a sweep of an arm or leg. A short gesture would produce a small, swift blade that was hard to see. A larger motion created a longer and more visible blade that was noticeably slower.
"Some abilities will come easily and naturally," Clive said. "Others you'll need to practice before you can use them effectively."
"We'll leave you to it for today," Jason said. "Play around and get used to them. Tomorrow we start training."
"That Adventure Society assessment is in a week, right?"
Belinda asked.
"Is she going to be ready?"
"The next intake was cancelled," Jason said. "After days of memorials, no one is looking to feed their young people into the grinder. The assessments will be rigorous in a way they haven't been for a long time, with a few exceptions."
"Won't that make it harder for Sophie to pass?"
Belinda asked. "The field assessment judges two things," Jason said. "The skill to reliably hunt monsters, and the judgment to know when not to. I won't let her participate until she's ready." He looked at Sophie, standing unhappily in her still wet clothes. No one is going to argue that you lack skill, he told her. Have you ever fought a monster? She shook her head. Once Rufus deems you ready, I'll take you out to the Delta and we'll do some adventure board notices. If you meet his standards, then passing the field assessment won't be a problem. A meeting was taking place in the conference room next to the director's office in the Adventure Society Administration Building. At the head of the table, but standing instead of sitting, was the leader of the inquiry team, Tabitha Gert. Her clothes were plain, with the only flourish her black Adventure Society pin. She wore a stern expression, accentuated by her tightly pulled back hair. Elspeth Arella was also present, sitting to Gert's right. Emir Bahadir sat at the other end of the table, his relaxed slouch a contrast with Arella's poise and Gert's rigidity.
Is there a reason the director of the Magic Society is not here?
Tabitha asked.
Lucian Lamprey would obstruct and inform because it serves his purposes, regardless of the outside consequences,
Arella said. This earned a pointed cough in her direction from Emir, which she responded to with a flat look.
Having Lamprey here, Arella said, turning back to Gert, would be as good as sending the families in question an explanatory pamphlet detailing out intentions.
That's very unhelpful, Gert said.
Of that I am aware,
Arella said. Gert turned her attention to Emir.
You are convinced these five expedition members have been compromised? She asked. If I discovered that this was some ploy to distract from the inquiry, it would not go well for you, gold ranker or not.
I'm convinced that the political cost of forcing the issue and being wrong is preferable to leaving it alone and being wrong.
Arella gestured at the door, which swung open of its own accord to admit Danielle Geller. Arella used her power again to close the door behind her. While Danielle would prefer to throw her at a window, she restricted herself to throwing Arella a dissatisfied glance before schooling her expression into blank professionalism.
Sorry I'm late, Danielle said. I've just come from a Waterlink communication with Jonah's family.
This is the one of the five from your family?
Gert asked.
He's from a branch family of House Geller, but broadly, yes. I've just been speaking with his parents and the branch family patriarch.
This boy, Jonah, Emir said. He refuses to be examined.
Yes, just like the others,
Danielle said.
He's been secluding himself from us. His behavior strongly indicates that he sees us as some kind of threat.
I've just had word, Arella said.
All five have withdrawn from their existing teams and formed a team together.
What? Danielle asked.
When did this happen?
Around an hour ago. I've had my deputy director keep a discreet but watchful eye on any official activity related to the five.
We need to act, Gert said.
However, it is outside the Adventure Society's purview to forcibly subject the five to examination.
Jonah may not have consented, Danielle said, but I've explained the situation to his people. They have given me formal permission to act on their behalf regarding his welfare. They are making the legal arrangements as we speak, and they'll send everything through the Magic Society via document duplication. There is a risk that word will get out that way, Arella said. Lamprey pays little attention to his own magic society, but these are hardly ordinary times. Even if he maintains his inattention, his deputy is subtle and thorough.
A dangerous combination, Emir said. His loyalty.
To Lamprey. By all indications, they are actual friends. My instincts tell me his only true allegiance is only to himself, but I've never found so much as a hint of disloyalty, and I did quite a bit of looking.
Gert frowned at Arella.
Using the Magic Society for such communication is a necessary risk, Gert said. This city has seen quite enough activity operating outside of the rules.
We shouldn't let rules get in the way of something this important,
Emir said.
There are always reasons to ignore the rules, Gert said, which is why we must be fastidious in following them. They are the very basis for civilization, without which we would exist in a state of anarchy.
I disagree, Emir said.
I don't care, Gert said. This operation is being conducted under the strictures of the Adventure Society, not one of your frivolous private excursions. Gold rank or not, you will follow instructions.
Yes, ma'am.
Once the legal documentation arrives, Gert said, we must act immediately to secure this Jonah boy. Have you lined up someone capable to examine him? The local magic society does not sound like a satisfactory place to find the assistance we need.
I've contacted the local High Priest of Purity, Emir said. He's politically detached and has as good a chance as anyone of finding anything that has been done to them and purging it safely.
You think there may be a danger? Arella asked.
The people we captured in the astral space all quite thoroughly killed themselves with some manner of object buried in their bodies, Emir said. My concern is our five adventurers coming to a similar end.
Turning to the Church of Purity is a good choice, Daniel said. I want to send Jonah home to his family intact.
The arrival of the inquiry team from the Adventure Society's Continental Council had little impact on Jason, at least over the first few days. He had not been a member of the expedition and was too low rank to be involved in major society affairs. In the meantime, he had been working with Rufus to prepare Sophie for the next Adventure Society intake. Rufus gave Sophie his own assessment, but remained mostly hands-off, leaving Jason to introduce her to various aspects of adventuring. He took on more of a mentor role to Jason, offering advice and guidance on what to teach her and how. They were discussing just that on one of the Cloud Palace's many terraces, the cool moisture of the ocean breeze cutting the hot, dry air. Her skills are impressive, Rufus said. In terms of empty hand technique, she's better than I am. Her weapon work isn't as strong, but given her abilities, that won't be an issue. All the fighting she's done has been against people, though, Jason said. Rufus nodded. Her lack of experience fighting monsters is unquestionably her main shortfall, he said. Take her out into the Delta and do some adventure board notices. Recruit Humphrey, if you can. He has more immediate impact than you if someone needs to step in. I was thinking the same thing, Jason said. Have you heard anything from his mother about the inquiry? They're auditing the whole branch, Rufus said. From what she's hearing, there will be sweeping demotions across the board, expedition members or otherwise. More than a few will be losing their membership entirely. I'll probably get bumped back down to 2 stars, Jason said. I always suspected that moving up to 3 stars so quickly was part of Arella's games, and I dare say this inquiry will agree. I wouldn't worry about local politics too much, Rufus said. Bronze rank will be a fresh start that you can make far from here. My part in the Remor Academy annex with the Gellers should time nicely with you ranking up and your indenture contract coming to an end. We can head for Vitesse, leaving this city and its troubles behind. We have no idea how things will look 6 months from now, Jason said. There should be a monster surge by then, right? There should be a monster surge by now, Rufus said. I'll be interested in where your thieves will be in 6 months. Things are changing in very large ways for them. That's up to them, Jason said. The whole point was to give them the chance to choose their own path. How goes the non-combat training? I've been teaching them what Farah taught me about meditation and aura manipulation, the mental exercises. Are you sure I'm ready to teach anyone? Farah was always impressed by you, Rufus said. We all saw the potential in you. You're her legacy now. Jason looked stricken. Don't say that, he said. I can't live up to it. None of us live up to the expectations we put on ourselves, Rufus said. Gary and Farah taught me to accept that, but in the attempt, we push ourselves to new heights. You don't have to be some shining representative of who she was. Just try to be an adventurer
she would be proud to have trained. That I can do. It feels strange, passing on what she taught me to these women.
You've been teaching them both.
Wexler will get essences for her friends sooner or later. If she knows the meditation techniques and training exercises beforehand, that's only for the good. Wexler tends to listen more with her friend riding herd on her too.
Problems with the training?
Wexler's walls are slowly coming down, Jason said. A lot of construction went into them, though. Building trust is half the battle.
Trust is crucial, Rufus said. If you want to teach her anything effectively, she needs to trust that what you're imparting has value and that you're doing so in good faith.
Any tips?
Don't try to rush things. Let time do its work.
Jason nodded.
It won't hurt to take a day off then, he said. I haven't seen Cassandra since the day the expedition got back.
You have plans?
She invited me to go sailing.
They're gone, Genevieve said.
The deputy director of the Adventure Society was in the director's office, along with Danielle, Emir, and Tabitha Gert.
What about tracking their badges?
Gert asked.
The fact that we couldn't track their badges is what drew our attention to them in the first place, Danielle said. They were all directed to have their auras re-examined and their badges replaced,
Arella said.
None of them showed up to do so.
Do we know anything?
Emir asked.
I've already got my information network in Old City looking, Arella said. They don't have the skills or the powers to hide from my people in Old City. If they're there, we'll find them. If they left, we'll know which direction. Our best course of action now is patience.
How reliable is your network in Old City?
Gert asked.
Now that everyone knows my father has me standing behind him, his power in Old City is unchallenged, Arella said. You couldn't ask for better.
You said they don't have the skills to hide, Emir said. That is assuming their skills are what they were. For all we know, they may not be in charge of their bodies anymore.
It doesn't change our course of action,
Danielle said.
We have people looking, so we be patient and let them. Acting just for the sake of doing something is borrowing trouble when we already have enough.
All the major temples in Greenstone fronted the Divine Square, but the rest of their space occupied extensive chunks of the temple district in sprawling, multi-building complexes. The Temple of Purity was no different, with a number of sizable buildings spread out over its spacious grounds. A priestess of purity, Anissa LaSalle, walked through those grounds to a construction site in the early stages of adding a new building to the temple's collection. On site was a foreman's office, made of what looked like hastily thrown together materials. Anyone with the right knowledge and the ability to see magic would realize that time, effort, and expense had been put into the powerful protections against eavesdropping built into the structure. Should anyone inquire, it was a sound-suppressing measure, allowing the foreman to hold meetings with the church representatives in peace and quiet. After stepping inside the building, Anissa glanced around, sensing for gaps in the sound-shielding magic, but finding it thorough and intact. The other occupant of the room looked every bit the ordinary construction foreman, yet she looked at him with a distaste undue a simple tradesperson.
Well? The man asked.
Your thrown-together plan has been lucky enough to work, Anissa said. All the attention is on the five you seeded. No one has even considered that your true agents exist to look for. We suggest you restrict your activities for the moment so as to not risk exposure.
Agreed, the man said. The next stage is reliant on remaining unnoticed.
You are certain that Bahadir will send people into another astral space?
Bahadir's people are loyal and discreet, but the people they work with are not always the same. Our information is solid.
And this other astral space is still sufficient scale to do as promised?
Oh yes, the foreman said. It's not the prize the desert astral space would have been, but still a very welcome one. As for the secondary effects of our claiming it, they will be more than enough to meet your needs.
Better, in fact, since you won't need to evacuate your people as far.
We are evacuating no one, Anissa said. It would arouse too much suspicion.
I admire your conviction, he said. After the adventurers have returned from this new astral space, we will need to become more active to carry out the next step. The risk of some of our agents being exposed during this phase is high.
They cannot be allowed to talk, Anissa said.
Again, we are in agreement, he said. We have more star seeds, and any of our people who know anything will be implanted.
See that they are, Anissa said. We'll speak again after the first stage is complete.
I look forward to it, priestess.
I don't.
She swept over to the door, flung it open, and left, as if rushing to escape a trapped stench.
Chapter 11. It's about how you use it. While a cabal of the city's most powerful plotted to get their hands on Thadwick Mercer and the other four suborned adventurers, Thadwick's sister was on her family's boat with Jason. Jason and Cassandra were, if the half-dozen Mercer family staff were discounted, all alone on the open water. The Mercer's family's recreational vessel was just as large and outlandish, to the point that only magic was sufficient for propulsion. It was made of wood, but was a far cry from the wooden ships Jason knew. White paint and smooth lacquer, seemingly impervious to the seawater and salty air, gave it a feel more akin to a contemporary pleasure craft. It reminded Jason of a superyacht from his own world, leading him to reflect that rich people seemed the same, whatever world he was in. There was a sunken lounging area in the middle of the foredeck. It was a square space, lined with seating on all sides and sporting a glass table in the middle. A huge parasol was affixed to the center of the table to offer shade. Jason and Cassandra lounged on a couch, leaning into one another.
This was a very good idea, Jason said. I'm so glad you offered. Everything has been sadness, frustration, and grief lately.
My thoughts exactly, Cassandra said. First the people lost to the expedition. Now these outsiders with their inquiry are pushing to hand Thadwick over to them.
For what?
They think something was done to him and want him examined by their own people when ours have already looked him over quite thoroughly. Mother is considering having Thadwick leave until everything has blown over. You haven't heard anything about it from the Gold Ranker, have you?
Amir's involved in it? I haven't seen him for days. If nothing else, I've been caught up trying to get my new indenture to listen to me.
Things not going well?
I'm here to forget about that, Jason said. Not talk about it.
I thought you were here for me,
she said, provocatively.
Nope, Jason said, with weary shamelessness. You are a welcome addendum to what is primarily an escape plan. I just hope you don't take on the stereotypical role of beautiful women in escape plans and betray me at a critical moment.
What kind of critical moment?
Well, Jason said, the kind that has a hammock, for example. I'm sure I spied a hammock hanging up somewhere when I came aboard.
Was it big enough for two? Cassandra asked.
You know, now that you bring it up, I think it was. She let out a relaxed chuckle.
Even if it wasn't, she said, it will be by the time we wander over there.
The staff were discreetly out of sight, but Jason could sense their auras.
That must have been a very strange way to grow up, he said, never having a truly private moment.
It teaches you to put on a facade, she said, one that takes an unusual person to shake.
Shaking it isn't the trick, Jason said. You need to make the person want to come out from behind it. You have to be tantalizing.
That's what you are, is it?
I think I have my moments, he said. You'll have to tell me.
Where is it exactly that you learned your particular way of handling people?
She asked. Private school.
Private school?
Yes. I grew up on a pleasant little stretch of coastline. Just a little town. Tourists in the summer.
Tourists?
Taking a holiday where I come from is a lot cheaper and easier than it is here. It isn't just the wealthy who can do it, although they certainly do it best. The less affluent participating in such activities are called tourists.
Do they have something to do with your private school?
Definitely not. Around 30 years or so back, a lot of wealthy people looked at our lovely stretch of coast and the conveniently placed local highway and decided to move in. Being rich, of course, they had no interest in our humble little town. Small, exclusive communities started popping up around us like mushrooms after the rain. Swanky summer homes and the kind of accommodation you can only afford if you own a boat like this one.
It doesn't really rain here, she said. I'll have to take your word on the mushrooms.
I'm trustworthy, Jason said. I just don't seem like it, because seeming trustworthy is suspicious.
You can be an unnecessarily convoluted man.
Thank you. Anyway, a lot of these rich people would only hang about for the summer, but enough stayed that they needed a place for their children to go to school. Thus, the Castleton Educational Institute was formed. Excellent teachers, quality education, exorbitant cost. Everyone of means in the region sent their children there from the first day of school until they were sent off to university.
Education is more prominent in your homeland, isn't it?
Cassandra asked. For now. The government keeps taking away money from the public schools to give to the wealthy private ones, but they haven't finished the job quite yet. Cassandra didn't need to ask why. Power dynamics were universal across worlds. Now, we weren't amongst the richest of the rich, Jason continued. But my family did very well for themselves. My mother got in property sales early, making quite the bundle on the influx of wealthy buyers. My father is a landscape architect and had a strong hand in literally shaping the new communities. Between them, they sold and/or designed most of the region.
So your family had money enough to send you to this fancy school?
I don't look like most of the children who went to that school. My father's parents came from another land, and we only have humans where I come from. Instead of looking down on elves or Leonids or whatever, people isolate and exclude by ethnicity.
That sounds foolish.
It is. It's getting better, but there are always these undercurrents of prejudice, coming out in little ways most people don't even notice. It's like constantly being pricked with needles and being accused of making a fuss if you have the gall to point it out.
That sounds appalling, she said.
You get used to it. That's just the background issue, though. The more specific problem was my older brother.
He made it hard for you?
Not intentionally, which made it all the more difficult to deal with. You see, my brother is excellent with people. He's the handsome one, the charming one, the obedient one. He can just go with the flow, let things pass without questioning. He has a way of intuiting what people want and becoming that. A social chameleon. Do you have chameleons here?
We do,
Cassandra said. Well, he is one, socially speaking. He doesn't manipulate people, not consciously. He just likes people and people like him. He went down very well with the wealthy families, who liked how unprejudiced they looked if their children had a multi-ethnic friend. It saved them from getting one themselves.
Let me guess, Cassandra said. One outsider friend was just the right amount, with a second one being surplus to requirements.
Exactly, Jason said. It sounds like rich families are the same wherever you go.
The way you describe your brother reminds me of Beth Cavendish, Cassandra said. You've met her, yes?
I have.
There aren't a lot of non-human families at the peak of Greenstone society, which doesn't always look good when you're dealing with global trading partners. Beth is something of an ideal, which makes people want to rope her in. She's very socially adroit, in a more subtle fashion than you. Similar to your brother, I suspect.
Are you saying I don't smoothly fit in?
Your approach to socializing is like tossing snakes into a ballroom.
I have no idea what you're talking about, he said, innocently.
My mother said that the first time you met her, you denied being in a group with some of the city's most powerful people and claimed to have won a raffle.
I forgot about that, he said with a chuckle. You're right about being socially adroit, though. I never had Cato's, That's my brother's name, Cato. I never had his skill for getting along. I just can't seem to help challenging and provoking.
Yes, we've all noticed.
Shush, you, he said, putting a finger to her lips. She kissed it and pushed it away. I was one foreign boy too many, he continued, despite not being foreign at all. Cato is a year older than me, so as far as the other kids were concerned, I was a disappointing rehash of the well-received original. I only had one real friend, the literal girl next door. Her name is Amy, and we grew up together.
Who you fell in love with, obviously,
Cassandra said. Oh, it wasn't just love, Jason said. It was 80s power ballad love.
I have no idea what that means.
Imagine a man with long hair, no shirt, open vest and leather pants, walking into the ocean while singing a song.
That sounds like an insane person.
Yes, Jason agreed. It was that kind of love.
It came to a tragic end?
She married my brother.
That must have hurt.
I reacted poorly, I'll admit, Jason said. But that's a story for another day. When we were in school, my brother cast a long shadow, and I never had his knack for becoming what people wanted. It turned out that my knack was for pulling people into my own pace. It got people to do what I wanted, at least until they stopped to think about what they were doing and got cross. They had no interest in being my friends, though, and I quickly stopped caring what a bunch of entitled rich kids thought about me.
It's been my experience, Cassandra said, that things can become quite political when you gather enough wealthy children together.
That's been my experience as well, Jason said. There and here. Speaking of entitled rich kids, how is your brother doing? You said people were looking to study him? Cassandra nodded unhappily.
Things had been going so well with him after the expedition. He's been training non-stop, actually building the skills he should have developed long ago. Mother and father are thrilled. Or they would be if it weren't for the rumours going around, which is why people want to take him away and start probing him.
What kind of rumours? Jason asked. I've been too busy to keep an ear out lately.
Your friend Bahadir brought tracking stones for all the members of the expedition, first to rescue survivors, then recover the fallen. There were 5 people, my brother included, whose tracking stones lost track of them. They were still found, all severely hurt. Now people are saying that something was done to them in the time they couldn't be tracked, and they were left to be found.
I'm sorry.
It's frustrating, she said. Thadwick is finally turning into the person we always hoped he would become, and people have found an all-new way to harass him. They say the changes to his personality are some kind of magical parasite.
I know from experience that being thrust into wild and unexpected danger can see you come out the other side different. I'm not the man I was before coming here. I've seen dangers and been driven to become as prepared as I can be for the next time. It makes sense to me that Thadwick experienced something similar.
Thank you, she said, leaning into him. I know you and he never got along, and I thought that might taint your judgment.
Hopefully I'm growing as a person. Have the other 4 been experiencing similar problems?
They have, she said, to the point that they felt the need to all leave their old teams and form a new one together.
That will only deepen the rumours.
I know, but Thadwick seems more settled this way. Go back to talking about your school. I want to hear more.
Well, there's not much to tell, really. I learned 2 lessons about people that have always held true in my world or yours. One was that people really like to fill in gaps in a story. You give someone the right selection of facts and you don't have to lie to them. They'll connect the pieces in accordance with their own beliefs and lie to themselves for you.
Wouldn't that make people wary of you once they figure out what you're doing?
That's where the second lesson comes in, Jason said. When someone believes something, they believe it hard. Too hard. They'll dismiss good evidence that contradicts their belief and accept spurious evidence that supports it. So, in their mind, if you're wrong, they're very wrong, and the whole point is that their thoughts don't go down that path.
That sounds like something that could get out of hand.
Oh, yes, Jason said. These realizations were far from original. People have been using them in my world for thousands of years to rather disastrous effect.
So why use them?
Amy used to ask me the same thing. People liked her better than me.
What did you tell her?
It's what I have, he said. Like any tool, it's about how you use it. A hammer can be used to build a house or club someone to death.
Did it make you any more friends?
I would say it gave me an accepted position in the social landscape. I've learned to take a quality over quantity approach to personal relationships, he said. Look at you, for example. Every eligible young man in the city hates my guts because of you, and so they should. You are spectacular, by any metric.
Thank you. But what about this Amy girl? It doesn't sound like she was too spectacular.
She was, Jason said. Still is, presumably. I've known her for most of my life, and there's no one I understand better. She was absolutely worth falling in love with, which only became a problem when my brother finally noticed that fact.
If you knew her so well, why didn't you see it coming?
I told you. People will dismiss good evidence if the bad evidence tells them what they want to hear. I'm no more immune to that than anyone.
You seem to have taken it well.
I can talk about it now, he said. At the time, I blew up my whole life, forming an ever-deepening vortex of mediocrity. Banal job, no real friends, a series of relationships you could see the end of before they began. He flashed her a wry smile. Coming to an alternate world was the best thing that ever happened to me, he said. Of course, 9 of the 10 worst things that ever happened to me happened here. Still, completely worth it. I'm happy with the balance.
Well, Cassandra said, maybe we can go find that hammock and tilt the scale.
Chapter 12. We End Here. As a week of ongoing memorial services came to a close, the adventuring community fell into a sober silence. The Adventure Society campus was quiet and, for the first time Jason had seen, largely occupied by adventurers who didn't come from the upper echelons of Greenstone Society. Jason had learned to recognize the upper crust adventurers over time. Many he knew by sight, although the quality of their gear was an even clearer indicator. The people he saw roaming the campus tended towards plain, functional equipment, more value for money than the highest performing gear. There was a pregnant pause in the wake of the disastrous expedition, while people awaited word of what the inquiry would do. In the absence of the usual dominating forces, frequently overlooked adventurers were coming to the fore. These were the adventurers who would never have gotten a place on the expedition and, in the absence of those who did, stepped in to fill the gap. While the expedition was now back, the city's most powerful families were licking their wounds and awaiting the inquiry results. The adventurers newly flourishing in their place were left free to continue. Belinda started working with Clive at the Magic Society. He took her in and showed her what was expected from her while things were still quiet for him. Once he was finally allowed access to what the expedition had brought back, he expected to become very busy. By that point, she needed to have already grasped the basics of her new job. For his own preparations, he reviewed works on astral magic from the Magic Society's library, as well as his own collection. Although it suited his purposes, he was rather dismayed at their availability. The people working on the materials brought back should have already been accessing the astral magic texts quite heavily. The incompetence of his fellows allowed Clive to put together a quick reference library of astral magic to help his own investigation, once he had access to the materials. He also put together some theory primers for Belinda to fill in the gaps in her patchwork education. Whenever Clive had no specific tasks for her, she could dive into the list. Jason, in the meantime, introduced Sophie to the training cycle that Rufus, Gary, and Farah had introduced to him. Some of it, like the meditation training and the weightlifting, was new. Other things, like the parkour and the observation training, she had been doing some version of for years. Because she could outperform him in certain aspects of the training, it colored her view of his ability in the others. She was self-sufficient by nature, more used to finding her own way through things than having someone instruct her. She hadn't had anything like a teacher since her father had died and was resisting it now. In one of the Cloud Palace's meditation rooms, Jason was instructing her on using meditation techniques to gain better control of the mana within her body. They were sitting on the soft cloud floor, cross-legged and face-to-face.
I can actively move the mana around my body, Sophie was arguing. Taking control feels better, stronger.
This technique isn't about strength or control, Jason said. It's about mapping out how the mana flows within the body. You need to be patient, sense how the mana moves on its own. Exercising control before gaining an understanding will do more harm than good.
It doesn't feel right, she said. It really feels like I should be doing it my way.
Jason ran his hands over his face, taking a deep, calming breath. He got to his feet. That's enough for today, I think, he said.
That's it?
I don't think continuing will be very productive. She lightly hopped up to her feet.
So, if I don't do everything the way you want, you just give up.
Meditation is about achieving a useful state of mind, Jason said. If we have fundamentally opposed positions on what you need to achieve, then we get nowhere. Letting it go and starting fresh tomorrow will achieve more than forcing the issue. Their respective suites were close together in the guest wing, so they walked together as they returned, albeit in silence. They encountered Clive and Belinda on the way, who easily spotted the tension. Jason gave them a curt nod of greeting before disappearing into his suite. Clive frowned as he looked at the door through which Jason had passed through, then at the dissatisfied expression on Sophie's face.
I think it's time we had a little talk, he said. Do you have a moment to discuss something?
She gave him a wary, assessing look before nodding and heading into the suite she shared with Belinda.
She means, of course, please do come in, Belinda said.
That's the impression I was getting, he said.
Belinda laughed as they followed Sophie inside to the main lounge of their suite. Sophie took a chilled bottle of water from a cooler cabinet and fell into a couch while Clive sat in a chair opposite her, across a low refreshments table.
So, what is it?
Sophie asked as Belinda sat down beside her. Clive looked Sophie straight in the eye.
We told you that you were given a choice of awakening stones, and Jason chose the one that gave you your aura.
I remember.
Jason is an affliction specialist, and that stone was almost certain to give you some ability that would be bad for him if you ended up on the opposite sides of a fight again, which is exactly what it did.
So?
Belinda asked.
He wants me to ask why,
Sophie said.
Yes, Clive acknowledged. I asked him myself why he would choose that stone.
And?
Sophie asked.
He said that three men had gone to considerable lengths to control your destiny. Cold Silver lost his chance when Lucian Lamprey became involved. Lamprey lost his chance when Jason claimed your indenture. I didn't know who the third man was, though.
Asano is the third man, Sophie said.
Yes, Clive said. He told me the same thing, and that's why he chose that stone. It makes it a little harder for him to enforce his grip on you.
I never asked him to be my protector, Sophie said.
He doesn't want to be, Clive said. He is giving you the tools you need to protect yourself.
He thinks he's my hero.
He is your hero, Clive said. Throwing you through a portal and never thinking about you again would have fulfilled whatever responsibility he felt towards you, and not many of us would have done even that much for you. But he doesn't think like me, and he's decided this is the right thing to do.
He shook his head disbelievingly before continuing.
Do you even understand what he has paid, literally and figuratively, to put you in the position you are now? He stood up to the directors of both the Adventure Society and the Magic Society. He actually stood in front of each and told them that he was taking you out of their hands. I wouldn't have done that. The idea of doing that would never have entered my head.
I don't think you're worth what he's done for you, but when Jason decides to do something, he goes all the way. He decided to help you, which is why you're here instead of chained to a bed somewhere with a glazed look in your eye.
I didn't ask for any of that, Sophie said.
And you don't deserve it, Clive said. Not everything he's done for you. It's past time you started to show him some gratitude.
You make him out like he's this great guy, Sophie said. But I've seen plenty of lying, scheming manipulators. He fits right in.
Yes, he does, Clive said. And look what his schemes and manipulations have done.
Clive stood up.
I've said my piece. Take it or ignore it as you please. I'll see you tomorrow, Belinda.
He walked out of the suite, leaving Sophie and Belinda alone. Belinda looked at Sophie, caught up in thought. Sophie met her gaze.
What do you think?
Sophie asked. Belinda thought for a while before answering.
Maybe Asano needs to feel powerful. To prove to himself he can make something a little less awful when awful is in abundant supply. We both know what it's like to be stuck in the mud, powerless to do anything about it.
People don't help other people to feel in control, Sophie said. They push those people down.
Jory doesn't, Belinda said. Look at what he's done to help people. I think maybe Asano is like that. And if he is, then what he's done for us is really incredible.
So I should go fawning after Asano now?
No, Belinda said. But maybe not treat everything he says and does like it's part of some scheme to screw you over. He's had every chance to hurt us, but everything he's done has helped us. At least give him the chance to prove he's actually trying to do right by you. Maybe even let him do it.
If he's such a good guy, then why does he always act shady?
Maybe he realized you'd find a good guy even more suspicious and didn't want you running for the hills.
Sophie's brow furrowed as she thought it over.
Yeah, she acknowledged with a nod. I guess I would have.
She got to her feet.
I'll go talk to him, she said. Maybe I can clear the air a little. Hear him out with an open mind, at least.
Belinda gave her an encouraging smile.
That sounds sensible, she said. I think we've been scrambling for so long that we may have lost the knack for sensible and patient.
Sophie went into the hall and found Rufus leaving Jason's suite.
Is he in?
She asked.
He is, but I'd leave him be for now. I just let him know that he's been demoted to 1 star.
What does that mean?
It means that he just went from the highest rank he could have to the lowest.
Why?
The inquiry in the Adventure Society.
I thought they were just looking at that expedition,
Sophie said.
They're doing a full audit to the local branch, looking at everything and everyone. They just announced a sweeping wave of demotions, including Jason's.
He doesn't seem like the kind that would be bothered.
Yeah, Rufus said. Not seeming bothered is something he's good at.
Jason looked out from his terrace, the late afternoon sun shining over the ocean. He had been expecting to lose 1 star, but 2 was a blow. Rufus had once again told him that it didn't matter, that soon enough he would be bronze and could start over at a new rank, but it still felt like a repudiation of everything he'd achieved. He knew he'd done some contentious things, but he believed he was a good adventurer. Until the moment Rufus walked in, he had the stars to prove it. Jason vaulted over the edge of the terrace, his cloak appearing around him. After floating down to a lower level of the palace, he made his way to the shore and set off through the Adventure Society campus. When he reached the marshalling yard, he found a throng of people. Rows of bulletin boards had been set up, listing demotions. A large notice at the front instructed the demoted to go to the administration building to have the stars removed from their badges. Jason went through the rows, shoulder to shoulder with people, as he looked for his name. He didn't think Rufus had gotten it wrong, but he needed to see for himself. He noticed as he browsed through the names that many weren't just demoted, but had their membership revoked entirely. He found his name. Jason Asano. Old rank, 3 stars. New rank, 1 star. He let out a weary breath, then extricated himself from the crowd.
He looked in the direction of the Adventure Society and saw that not many people were heading there to confirm their demotion. He overheard talk that people wouldn't stand for it and the decision would be overturned. He heard more than one assertion that they would refuse to confirm the demotion until all the politics had played out. Jason made his way to the administration building, where a long bench had been set up. There were four Adventure Society officials behind it, with people queuing up in front. The officials were each using a wedge-shaped magical stone to remove stars from badges. None of the queues were long, and Jason joined the one that led to Vincent. "Rufus found you, then," Vincent said when Jason reached the front. "He did." "Sorry about this." Jason handed over his badge, watching the third star, then the second, disappear as Vincent touched it twice with his stone. Jason took it back and left. Standing outside the admin building, he had no interest in going back to the Cloud Palace. Setting his feet in the direction of the jobs hall, he strode off. He wanted to kill something. After 4 days in the Delta, he met a member of the Geller family and discovered that people thought he had gone missing. "No," Jason had told the man. "I'm just doing adventure notices. Tell them I'm fine." It was another week before he returned to the city. He went straight to the jobs hall, handing over the contract he had originally taken, along with a stack of completed adventure board notices. As he made his way across the Adventure Society campus, he heard Cassandra call out his name. She was rushing to catch up to him, but became hesitant as she drew closer. "What's wrong?" he asked.
"I've been trying to find you," she said. "I heard you were out in the Delta."
"I was."
"Jason, I..."
She looked around. They were standing in an open area of grass with few people in sight. Ever since the expedition, far fewer people were to be found at the campus, with the demotions only making it worse.
"What is it?"
he asked. He tried to act as if the distance she kept between them didn't tell him what she was about to say.
"I have to end things. Between you and I."
He was going to ask why, but his brain beat his mouth. "The demotion," he said.
"I've received a lot of privileges being part of my family," she said. Her beautiful face was sunken, reluctant, but determined. "There are responsibilities that come with it too. I have to find a match that makes the family stronger."
"I see.
Your lack of background always made it hard to convince the family. Mother helped. Your connections to the Gellers and the Vitesse adventurers were good, and your rapid rise silenced a lot of voices. Dropping to one star, though, I have to find someone reliable."
"You think I'm unreliable?"
"You know I don't. I argued against it, but it was decided. We end here."
"Just like that?"
"I didn't want this," she said. "They're being short-sighted, I know."
"But they're family," Jason said.
"Yes," she said, softly.
She was holding her hands in front of her, vulnerability showing in what was usually an unassailable countenance. He stepped closer, gently taking her hands in his.
"All right," he said. "All right."
"Not really, but yes."
"Just like that."
"What did you expect?" he asked.
"I don't know. Maybe I thought you'd say that nobles are stupid and do something reckless and impulsive."
"That would only hurt you and accomplish nothing," he said. "Take it from someone who let a failed relationship drive a wedge between him and his family." He leaned in, gently kissed her, and stepped back, letting go of her hands. His eyes glistened with tears, but he had a familiar, impish grin. "You're going to miss me, Cassandra Mercer."
"I know."
He turned and walked away without looking back. Chapter 13. Poison Pill. It was late morning, the sun high in the sky. Clive arrived at the Cloud Palace and found someone standing near the platform that touched the shore.
"Acolyte Pellin," he greeted. "Mr. Standish,"
she greeted in return.
Are you waiting for something?
I'm waiting for Mr. Asano, she said. I'm going to deliver a gift from my goddess, as promised.
Jason has been gone for almost 2 weeks, Clive said. I take it, as an acolyte of knowledge, that you know something I don't.
He's on the Adventure Society campus right now, she said. He's speaking with Cassandra Mercer, and will be done shortly. Clive looked up at the towering Cloud Palace.
Then I think I'll wait as well, he said. My days have been busy, but I can spare a few minutes. It must be an odd experience, having knowledge placed into your mind by your goddess.
I'm told the sensation is similar to using a skill book, Gabrielle said. I've never used one myself, but my experience is gentler than a skill book, from what I'm told. The goddess doesn't impart so much information at once.
I always imagined it would be disconcerting, he said. I've spent so much of my life in pursuit of knowledge that having it just turn up in my head would be quite alarming.
The goddess is aware of your pursuit, Mr. Standish, and she loves you for it.
Oh, thanks.
He's here, she said, turning away from Clive. Clive followed her gaze to spot Jason. He became slightly alarmed at what he saw. Jason was still wearing his battle robes, which he rarely did in the city. His gaze was normally sharp and focused, or roaming and observant, but today he looked puffy-eyed and disoriented.
I don't suppose your goddess told you if he's been drinking? Clive asked.
He hasn't, Gabrielle said. Cassandra Mercer just ended their relationship.
Oh,
Clive said sadly, then turned a narrow gaze on Gabrielle.
I think I'm starting to understand why Jason complains about your goddess and privacy.
Gabrielle gave Clive a disapproving glare. She is knowledge, Gabrielle said. Knowledge is hers to disseminate as she sees fit.
Jason drew closer, giving Clive a sad and tired smile.
G'day, Clive. It's been a while.
He greeted Gabrielle with a nod.
Acolyte?
Mr. Asano?
Jason turned back to Clive. They must be keeping you busy at the Magic Society by now.
They are, Clive said. I don't have answers yet, but I'm making progress.
How's your new assistant?
She has some unusual gaps in her knowledge, but she works hard and learns fast. Everything I could hope for.
Good. Have they been talking about bringing in more astral magic specialists?
Haven't you heard?
Clive asked. Heard what? Jason asked. I've been chasing monsters through wetlands for 2 weeks.
The events in our astral space were not unique. There have been incidents in other astral spaces all around the world.
That's disturbing, Jason said. His unfocused expression grew sharp as his muddled brain started turning over. But that explains why there were no opponents above silver in ours for an operation of that scale, he said. Whoever they are, they needed their high rankers for the high magic areas. There was no reason to anticipate gold rank adventurers here, so they could save them for other regions.